Devotees read books, and then they always have questions. They're not reading, and they don't have questions. I read Prabhupada's books, so I get so many other questions or discussion points that come up. That's what spiritual life means, at least on the progressive platform of Krishna consciousness. That's why Bhagavad Gita is about questions and answers, and Srimad Bhagavatam is about questions and answers, and it's the common feature of devotional interaction. That's the only way that one comes to the platform of being a Madhyamadhikari or a progressive devotee, is by hearing Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. For devotees, that's what devotees talk about, and that's what devotees read about. Matschita madgata prana bodhanta parasparam katyantas chamanitya katyantas chamanitya. Devotees are always discussing katha about me. Otherwise, then our intelligence gets absorbed in so many other kinds of katha and other types of thoughts. Krishna Priya Valuka Gandhava Lalita Shakti Vishaka Shakya Shukini
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it explains that the soul is indestructible, immovable, and yet also it explains that that the soul transcends, which gives me the impression that the soul actually moves. Can you explain?
That the soul moves?
That the soul travels. Does the soul travel in the sense that it moves? Or does the soul, is it simply a change of consciousness?
First of all, that verse that you quoted doesn't say anything about moving. Just says it's eternally the same. But don't you move?
Yeah.
So, isn't the soul moving? What's moving? Your body may be moving, but your soul's inside the body. What do you think the soul is?
Part and parcel of Krishna, it's energy.
Energy?
Yeah.
Well, it's energy, but do you think that the soul is energy? Everything's Krishna's energy. But the soul's a thing. The soul's a substance, isn't it? Soul's a finite thing that has dimension and exists in space and time. The soul's not consciousness. The soul's conscious. Isn't it? But it's a spiritual. What does consciousness mean? Sat Chit Ananda. So chit means consciousness. Chit means awareness. Soul is aware. But the soul isn't just knowledge. That's Mayavadi philosophy. That everything is just knowledge. Sat Chit Ananda. So the soul is a substance, it's a spiritual substance. Just like this table is a material substance, and this is a spiritual substance. Because the soul's in the body, and the body moves. So when the body moves, then the soul moves. And when the body dies, then the soul moves to another body. The soul moves by its karma. So it's not the body that moves the soul, but it's karma that moves the soul. Isn't it? You understand? The karma moves the soul. Because does the body move the soul, or does karma move the soul? Because what moves the body? Karma moves the body. Body can't do anything outside of karma. So, and whose karma is it? It's the soul's karma. So really karma moves the body, and the soul is within the body. And since the body is the extension of the soul's karma, therefore the soul and the body have similar movement until the karma's up, at least in this life. And then tatadihantara prapti, and then it takes another body. Soul is moving, sarvaga, and soul is everywhere, or souls are everywhere. They're in outer space, in other planets, they're in the water, they're in the air. Soul is everywhere. But the soul is not just consciousness. The soul is conscious, and that every sane person can accept, should be able to accept, that I'm conscious. If someone doesn't accept that, then no point in talking with a person. Doesn't think that he's conscious. Everyone can perceive consciousness. But you can't explain consciousness in terms of, in any material terms. It's a completely different thing. The idea to be able to explain the soul as something in the same way in material terms, or to be able to perceive the soul in material terms, is just assuming that it's also matter, but it's completely different. So when someone says, I can't see the soul, it's because requires other types of perception to see the soul. But consciousness, you can perceive or infer the presence of the soul. Something else on that?
Soul doesn't actually do anything but just sleeps and sees the dream of material life. Can you explain how is it?
Because the soul is being moved along as a result of its karma. So the karma determines what happens, and the soul is just like a witness. Just like you go to a movie and you sit down and you just watch the movie. So, same thing, the script is already written for your life, and all the soul does is really witness what happens. You have, limited freedom as to what you can do in the movie. You can eat popcorn, or you can talk to your friend, or you can even hit your friend in the head who's sitting next to you. And then there's some additional result that comes from that. But ultimately the movie goes on. So, same way, when a says the soul does nothing at all, it means that the destiny is already enacted. It's already written the script as to what should and what will happen to the soul. And now the soul is just watching.
So it means it doesn't make any decisions?
It does, just like I said, you make a limited number of decisions, depend on how confined you are. When you're in a movie house, you can make so many decisions. When you're sitting in a jail, you get to make less decisions, but some decisions you can make. But your decisions are also influenced by your nature, not just your karma, but also by your nature. So you make decisions, and because you have the freedom to make those decisions, what to speak of having made the original decision of coming to this material world, therefore you're punished for them. If the soul didn't make any decisions, then there wouldn't be any question of being punished. You can't be punished for something you're not responsible for. But you are responsible, especially responsible for being in this world. So once you decide to come into this world, then you have to take the reaction for all of your activities.
Decide to watch the movie, or let's say,
chant one name. Yeah. Those are decisions that we make, and the more that we the more that we become free from our karma or our past sins, then the more our freedom increases. So make decisions, but sometimes you have to make decisions under duress, it's called. So duress means that you have your fate, you have your karma, you have your nature, and those things interfere with the decisions that you make. You still have to be responsible for them, just like a thief. He may have maybe as a child, he just grew up as a thief, and if he didn't steal, then he didn't eat. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Those are the circumstances, but you still get punished. You still have to suffer the consequences or the reaction. But as you become more and more freed, aham tam sarva papebhyo sarva pap, when you become free of all your past deeds, then you really come to the platform of freedom. So just like sometimes devotees say, I'm going to take sannyas, renounce the world, because that's the best thing to do. And it is. But then, because their nature is still what it is, then they can't stick to that. They fall down. So then sannyasi gets married. And we see that happens. So, why? Because he's free to make a decision, free to make a choice, but his nature is still there, and that nature still influences of that choice. It was his nature first was premature. If he was more in touch with himself, then he would have known that I'm not qualified to be a sannyasi. And then afterwards, if once he took sannyas, then spiritual practices would have been strong enough he could overcome his nature, but still, nature prevailed. So once one really comes, or one becomes further advanced, maybe if you can say someone comes to the platform that he is actually nishta, or firmly fixed in devotional life, then even though his nature still acts on the mind, but he's able to control his senses, and so therefore is able to go forward. But there's still the risk. So Krishna says, yastindriyani manasa, that, all right, maybe you're controlling your senses, but if in your mind you're always thinking about sense gratification, then you just end up fooling yourself. So when one comes to transcendental platform, then that's real freedom, because Saguna and Samatitaita Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpati. One is above the modes of nature. Neither the modes of material nature, nor past karma, none of these things influence one's ability to decide. So free will, or will and destiny, both of those things are there. And the more one becomes Krishna conscious, the more destiny loses its power, and more one will actually becomes free. And that's why we use sadhu, shastra, guru to make decisions. Otherwise we may decide the wrong thing. So Arjun decided that he was going to go off and become a beggar, but that didn't sit well with Krishna at all. So finally, when he heard Krishna and he listened to Krishna and he understood what Krishna wanted, then he said, all right, now I'll do what you want. Because he realized that that was the activity that was going to be perfect, and not only karma-free, but it would lead him to liberation. So he did that. He did what Krishna wanted. And ultimately, that's what free will means for us, is we're free to do what Krishna wants us to do. And then if we do that, then all of our activities become perfect. But if we try and figure out necessarily what to do, then based on our own nature and our own fate and our own intelligence, we may or may not be doing the right thing.